from newstalkzb.co.nz, it's the Mike Hosking Breakfast with BNZ.
Welcome to the rewrap for Wednesday. All the best bits from the Mike Hosking Breakfast on Newstalk ZB in a sillier package. I am Glenn ZB, and this morning it looks like the Greens are making a big move in Nelson. What's going to happen there? What's happening with young people and the way they're voting? How much do we care about an old cricket tour? And petrol panic, widespread petrol panic. But before any of that, the big and final debate tonight.
Politics is often, especially in television, I can tell you, especially in television, is a ratings killer. Seen as a bit of a ratings killer, ratings death. Nothing this time round could be further from the truth. The biggest programs on the television this past month are the debates. First encounter we had, that first debate, 1.1 million people. And those numbers in the modern age, in the age of multiple channels and choices and downloads and streaming, they're unheard of. The days of a nation sitting down for a singular event, an event that's discussed at length the next day, if not for the next week, are largely done. So for the political junkie, this has been a godsend. People are engaged, and in record numbers. We're seeing it in the voting too, of course, as I mentioned a moment ago. Massive numbers already having ticked the box. 225,000 last time, 500,000 this time so far. Whatever way they're voting, you can't argue that we're not engaged, which is why I cannot for the life of me, by the way, work out why TV3 have barely dipped their toe. And TV3 have done one debate. Singular debate, a couple of weeks ago, and that's it, in prime time. Worked well for them too, by the way. They got about 500,000 people, which for them is a big deal. And here we are, days to go, stakes are high, outcome uncertain. They're nowhere to be seen, for goodness sake, which makes tonight an even bigger deal. If the first was the test, for the leaders in the sense they were sizing each other up, didn't want to make a major error. Well, this one feels like it might have a touch of the desperation about it. Might be a last chance saloon. The arguments are honed, of course. The mistakes have been made on the campaign. The tiredness, I suspect, is starting to set in a little bit. It's all there to play for. Wouldn't miss it for the world, even if I wasn't in the middle of it.
That's Rich coming from the guy who did actually miss one of his own debates last week. He was supposed to do that minor leaders one. Remember, he didn't turn up for that. He was sick, apparently. Mind you, Winston didn't turn up for it either, so what can you say? The Greens are certainly turning up in Nelson.
In the Colmar poll, a new one of which is out tonight, by the way, they would need 7% to get 5% on Saturday, and they don't have that number. And here's why it's so critically important. One, most obviously, they don't make the 5%, they don't win a seat, they're out of Parliament. And once you're out of Parliament, it's nigh on impossible to get back in. This would be a cataclysmic result for them and might well be the talking point of the night. So armed with that potential, they suddenly find a seat in a poll that they can try and convince enough people is real. And the other part is, if the Greens don't get to the 5%, that vote's, of course, burned off. You're burning off as much as 4.9%. Add the top vote, the Opportunities Party vote, which will also get burnt off, you're looking at potentially 7 or 8% of the vote gone. You're suddenly splitting, think about it, 92, 93% of the vote. That plays brilliantly for National, who suddenly need maybe 43% to get to government. Mostly, who wins a seat doesn't matter anymore, given the percentage of the vote is what drives the MMP. But for ACT, once upon a time for United, for the Maori Party, and now they would argue for the Greens, a seat is potentially life and death. The Greens, of course, should never have been in this position. The Greens are here thanks to Touré and her self-obsessed narcissism. These are desperate days, clearly, for them. And if the seat argument and this magic phone poll didn't smack so clearly of desperation, we might be taking it just a little bit more seriously.
So they polled people with magic phones. What's the most magical phone around? The Meizu Pro 7. It's got two screens. It's got a screen on the back as well as a screen on the front. That's pretty magic. I don't think that's what... That would be a small sample size. I think not many people are using those phones. Anyway, I've got way off topic here. Let's get back to the election. Young people, are they turning up? Are they some of these early voters? What's happening there?
By the way, those numbers, enrolment. So I gave you the 18 to 24s. 25 to 29s, once again, more young people. Enrolled this time 76% versus 81 last time. And so that, if you're looking for a youth quake, if you're looking for a major level of support among young people, has got to have you worried. Because one of the traditional problems, as I pointed out, even when you are enrolled, young people tend not to get out in vast numbers. It all depends on the vibe, on the mood, the weather, the night before, that sort of stuff. And they just don't come out in the numbers. And so what Labour need is what they're calling a youth quake, and that will shift the vote for them. But if they're not enrolled, They can't vote. And of course, you can still enrol, and I would urge everybody to enrol because democracy is a wonderfully important thing. But the numbers don't spell good news for Labor at this stage anyway, especially given how many people actually have gone out and voted already. The numbers don't dovetail.
Yeah, I get very uncomfortable, as I've said before, with the idea of young people having any kind of influence over anything at all, anywhere, be it nationwide political policy or just things that are just happening in my house, for example. Don't want it. Let's go to the opposite end of the spectrum. History and old cricketers and Richard Hadlee, Sir Richard Hadlee, writing a book about his dad being on tour, which he's extrapolated it all out of his dad's diaries. So, yep, if you are bored by cricket, by history, or by Richard Hadlee, have I got something for you.
What did you know versus what did you learn when you read this stuff?
Well, as kids, Dad always talked about the 49 tour and the friendship, the camaraderie and the bond between the players, which I think was the greatest message that came out of that tour. I don't believe there's any other New Zealand cricket team that's had that sort of friendship and lifelong friendship as well. But for me, it was detail about Dad, the fact that he was so meticulous, as you say, a day-to-day diary over 240 days that they were away. Really, it's an extraordinary story. The fact that he set goals and targets. So I know where I got that from now, reading his diary, and just how accurate he was. I mean, being an accountant, everything had to add up and these sorts of things. And so he had planned and plotted it. And really, it's an amazing story, particularly for me. It's one of the proudest moments of my life, actually, is to bring this story to life from 1949. Not only is it in a book form, but there's a DVD that actually goes with the book, and that's about the 49ers. And you got Dad reading from the diary, you got other players reflecting back on the tour in their later years. And I don't think, quite frankly, that anything like this has been attempted before.
It's brilliant.
So it's a tremendous achievement for me, I can assure you.
And it's more, I'm assuming, it's more than cricket. It's a sort of a historic story too, isn't it?
Well, yes, it's definitely about a cricket tour. And, I mean, they had 5 weeks on the boat going over to England. They had 6 months in England. They went into Germany and played a game there, would you believe? Came back home via the Panama Canal. So it's a detailed account every day. But it is a cricket story, but it's also about history, the life and times of what England and what war-torn Europe was like way back in 49, because at that time, England and Europe were rebuilding after the war. It was the age of austerity. There were food and fuel shortages, a lot of negativity around, particularly in England. And really, the English public focused their attention on sport, particularly cricket when the team was there, expecting their team to do particularly well. And, of course, that's another story because we competed favourably, and crowds of 25,000, 30,000 were turning up on a regular basis.
Yeah, I'm not sure Sir Richard did a great job of selling this book to me, when really the thing that seemed to impress him most about what his dad put in his diary was the fact, his attention to detail and how meticulous he was. That sounds like something that would impress Sir Richard Hadlee, not me quite so much. But anyway, there you go. Let's finish up with the pipeline situation, or in fact, what's now been labelled as the fuel crisis in the news, it appears.
And one of the petrol companies said, keep calm and carry on. And I thought, well, that's the last thing I'm going to do. When it comes to cars and petrol, I can't keep calm and carry on at all. I need to be topped up constantly. I need to be full. I'm not one of those people who can drive around with not much petrol in the tank. Those people on the side of the road you see on the motorway, and they've run out of gas and they're walking with a 5 litre in their hand, you think, you're an idiot. You know, wake up and smell the coffee and get your life together. If you cannot go from A to B without running out of petrol, what other catastrophe is involved in your life? And I always get down to quarter. Quarter is the absolute minimum I will deal with before I'm into the tank. And
this is all coming clear to me now. Now I understand the whole resistance to the EV situation. Now.
Oh, no. You have
range anxiety.
I have range anxiety.
And petrol-powered cars, ones that are plugged in via an extension cord.
Here's the thing. So I'm driving to work and going to the television yesterday afternoon, having gone to the service station, and who am I following? I'm following a Tesla. And I'm thinking, this guy doesn't have a problem in the world.
Exactly.
He's just rolling into town. Good luck to him. I almost sort of pulled up at the side of the lights and honked at him and said, look, I'll buy it off you on the spot because my thing's running out in a couple of hundred Ks and God knows if I'm ever going to be able to get to work. But here's what I found yesterday. as I went in to fill up, maybe it was about 12 or 13 litres. That's how pathetic I am. I went in just to top it up. I thought, I don't want to get in trouble here. 12, 15 litres are going to top it up. All the service stations I went past, and I monitored this, and I go past 4 or 5, they were all busy. And I mean, like, noticeably busy with queues. So people were clearly doing the same thing I was.
Was it Pi Day?
No, it wasn't. I also noticed a number of tanks were closed down. So they'd coned off various tanks. So they're only running certain numbers of bowsers. So clearly they were worried as well. So this whole keep calm and carry on is bollocks. No one's calm. We are carrying on, but under some duress, is my experience of yesterday. And I'll be back there today with another 5 litres just to top myself up, just to make sure I'm okay.
So there you go. If you ever need somebody to drive the getaway car, you know, in a sort of a born identity situation where, you know, suddenly you just need to grab an innocent bystander and you just say, drive, drive, and you want to go as far and as fast as possible, jump into Mike Hosking's car because you know he's got a full tank of gas. I'm Glenn ZB. That was the rewrap. Filled right to the brim. We'll see how full we can get it there for you tomorrow. I'll see you then.